welcome to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. We're having a little chat about the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows, obviously. I'm David Ferrier.
Stephen Merchant.
We're two little Australian radio fellas air-checking each of these shows week by week. I've been a Mad fan forever. This is Zach's first time listening to them. He's never heard them before, so we're listening week by week as they were originally aired. Today's show, Series 1, Episode 22, a.k.a. Carl at the BAFTAs. Broadcast the 27th of April, 2002. Zach, overall thoughts?
I don't think we're challenging the scoreboard. Oh, hang on. Whoops. I'm meant to come up with a proverb, aren't I? Or like a little rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that.
Okay.
Sorry, I stopped listening 2 minutes ago to the episode.
Oh, so you're fresh
okay,
off
I got one, I got one, I got
okay,
one.
Okay, okay.
I got one. Carl tells a story about a brain being fried whilst some of his theories fry our brains.
I've got, while Carl went to the BAFTAs knowing he wasn't going to win anything, he also didn't know that being a part of this show was going to help him win at life. Just a note on the BAFTAs thing. He says it was the worst thing he's ever had to do.
That was one of the... It was kind of the first quarter of the show, recapping what happened at the BAFTAs. And Carl came along with Ricky and Steve and filmed some behind the scenes apparently and stuff. Carl said it was one of the worst nights of his life.
Which there's no way they saw that coming. They might have suspected that he didn't have a great time, but that he was going to put it in those terms. But I thought about it, that it would have been... They don't say it, but it must have been one of the greatest nights of their entire life for Ricky and Steve. It's their first major, major award for The Office.
Yeah, well, they're obviously quite excited because they're recording it. You know, there's like little kids going on their field trip. You know, did you used to take a disposable camera on year five camp? You would take photos of everything.
Yes, I did.
And so, the effort that they're going to now, which I don't think... you'd go to later in your career of like all these kind of behind the scenes things that you're going to include on the DVD. It feels like something that you have the energy for when you first get onto the scene.
Also when DVD sales were still a thing.
Yeah. I guess where would you put them now? YouTube, I guess.
I know. Netflix. Wouldn't have thought so. A lot of the things that Steve references, the Ricky, playing with the elastic band and all the sort, like even the behind the scenes at the BAFTAs, they brought Carl along to film The Office Series 2 behind the scenes. Watch the documentary. It's all in there. Emails, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. We've got a listener in India.
Hello.
He says he's from Madras, right on the south coast on the Bay of Bengal. First came across Gervais through his Golden Globe work, then went down a YouTube rabbit hole of the animated shows, and finally the holy grail of XFM. Took me quite a while to get used to the accents. The three of them sound so different to one another, but now I reckon I've been around at least 30 times. Nothing quite like it, as I'm sure you know.
Interesting. That's a common thing said about radio shows, is I can't tell them apart, the voices, and then once you listen more and more, you do get really good at it. And so, like, I would listen to when I was much more into radio, I reckon I could tell almost every voice in the country or close to, at least every voice in the city, from a very short. And I used to be really good at picking voiceovers as well. But, you know, it's, if you're around it a lot, you hear it a lot. But I remember when I first started radio, I remember talking to a colleague and being like, who's that? And they're like, you can't tell who that is? And it was like one of our friends.
could you even identify the workday jocks?
Yeah. Oh, at least in our city. I couldn't do that nationally. I could do
That's
a lot of them
impressive.
Though. I was into it. Go flash 10 years ago, I was obsessed with radio.
Even daytime radio, where they're just playing music and talking for 20 seconds.
I didn't know, you know, when you first get into radio, you don't really know there's a difference. When you're 20, you just think you're on the radio. It's not until later that you realize, oh, if you're not in a show, you don't get to say much. You know, there's not much you can do with 10 seconds between songs.
You are under very, very strict rules.
Which, you know, strict rules and restrictions do lead to creativity. There is still creativity, a lot of it. But It's just a different, it's a different beast, and it's something that people don't appreciate. You know, the public, it's not something that's applauded, you know, that skill, because it's so, you know, it just, no one really understands what goes into it.
I agree with you. It's a completely underappreciated skill. And even within just the way the market works, that crossover from the end of the breakfast show at 9 a.m. into the first workday jock, the value and the cost to the company drops by like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. It's a steep, if you look at the audience drop off too.
Like, yeah, and that's why.
It's
that's
a
why.
Steep drop off at 9 a.m. Or I think in the UK it's a bit different. I think their breakfast shows go a bit later. But in Australia, it drops off a lot at 9 a.m. and then rockets back up at around 3 or 4 p.m.
Yeah, that's why breakfast and drive, when people are driving to work and driving home from work, those are the money-making hours for the radio stations. And that's why there is such a huge disparity between breakfast announcers and everyone else.
It is an underappreciated skill, but it's also a dying skill, because there's less and less money in it, and they're doing more and more hybrid roles, which means you're a producer slash announcer, or music director slash announcer, or operations slash announcer, which means, you know, more and more people have to pre-record shifts, more and more people don't get time to prep shifts. And so when I left, and it was at quite a big company, a lot of the announcing was pre-recorded. You know, they'd go into the studio for 15 minutes an hour, record for the next hour, then they'd go out, and for the 45 minutes they were doing another job.
Yeah, and they're getting a lot more bang for their buck these days. Yeah. Out of the...
It's sad. Particularly,
yeah, look, well, I used to hear about back in the glory days of the mid-90s, an afternoon's jock working 12 till 3 on air would be paid $150,000 a year or whatever, like, you know, that's very anecdotal, but would roll in at 12 and read some magazines, read the paper, do their 3 hours of talk breaks, because it's not like the format of the show changed. It was still fairly short talk breaks, and then roll out of there. There was no kind of jumping off air and then scheduling music for another 4 hours. It was a different time.
Well, that's the other thing that might be unknown to audiences who aren't familiar with the ins and outs of a radio station is, not only a lot of those roles hybrid, at least in Australia, I'm not sure about the UK and other places, but the money is like, a lot of people think if you're on the radio, you're earning big bucks, particularly daytime announcers. Even if you're at the big station, it's not particularly good money.
Award rates, usually, whatever the government demands that they pay. The Air Check Series 1, Episode 22 of the Ricky Gervais Show on XFM. Zach, are you on to Tin Pot Radio on Spotify, or did you listen
on YouTube? No, not yet. Okay. I listen on YouTube, but I'm keen to.
Break one, I agree with Carl straight off the bat. He's stressed out because Ricky and Steve are asking for last-minute changes to the selection of the song. As someone who's been on the receiving end, on the panel side, last-minute changes are so annoying. And very
stressful. In these days, it would have been physical as well. I think they always talk about finding the CDs, whereas I think for your whole career, it was all on the computer, right?
Starting out in community radio, there was still a CD library and you'd go and pick what you wanted to play, but commercial radio made that jump all in the system. Even though the first, like, big, when I moved to Sydney, they'd obviously done a refurb right at the crossover time where they still built in a CD library, but it was just, all the doors were locked. It was packed with CDs, but no one touched them.
That's the funny thing that happens later in the episode where they played Give Me Shelter by the Rolling Stones, like a super famous song. Yeah. And they say that it took them ages to find in the library. Like, you could bring that up in 5 seconds now, not only in a radio studio, but on any smartphone.
In the time you've been just saying that sentence. Oh, here's an ad. Well, you know what I'm doing. I'm bringing it up on YouTube.
And he's got it. And we're all applauding him. What a great illustration of the point.
There we go. On the Carly Pilt Boys podcast, this is Give Me Shelter, the Rolling Stones. In the next 10 minutes, you're shot at $10,000. Don't go anywhere.
I think you have to stop it. Right.
Oh, yeah. It might get picked up.
Legally. I think you're allowed 7 seconds.
Oh, God. How much? Okay. Well. If no, I just you're made still that up. Hearing I don't know. This podcast, we survived. That is why you may have picked up, listeners, that I've dropped the Kyle Pilkington bit from the start and the little bit from the end, and I don't play the clips as much because for that very reason. Don't want this
That's
show
fair
to
use,
down.
I think, isn't it? If we're commenting on the show and assessing the show and playing clips of the show.
Zach, I'm actually just lazy. I can't be bothered doing
right,
anymore. Okay. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, cool.
Break two. DJ Steve. Carl is a bit hungover because he went and saw DJ Steve DJ. He says it went down a storm. Steve says he kicked ass. It sounds like, I mean, I know they just come off the BAFTAs, but it sounds like a genuine highlight of Steve's life.
100%.
Like it's as cool as he can be is playing good music.
Carl's telling an anecdote, like starting to tell a story that's intended to be funny or interesting. Steve derails it to tell everyone how good of a DJ he was and all the compliments that everyone gave him.
Some big names in there. Zane Lowe.
Yeah, Zane Lowe, wow.
He is huge. Very influential.
He must have been pretty young at the time.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah,
unless he's not as, he might be older than what I think he is.
Stand by.
Because he started that Beats One, didn't he? Which he's I don't know if it exists anymore.
Yeah, is that still a thing? I remember there was a lot of... Did you ever listen into it? I was like, I tried it for a second. He's 48. So this is 20 years ago. He would have been 28.
Yeah, pretty young.
Yeah.
Similar age.
To
Steve.
We get onto the landmark moment of Carl mentioning his favourite song, The Killing of Georgie. He says, it tells a story, no trickery. He recites the plot of Killing of Georgie from memory and just fills in the gaps in the way that only Carl can, that he says that he's from Scotland. Steve says, a lot of people will have never heard of this song. I certainly was one of them the first time that I heard this episode. Have you ever heard Rod Stewart's The Killing of Georgie?
No, I haven't, and I've heard extremely little Rod Stewart.
Did you listen through to the end, to like where they play the entire song?
Yeah, I did. Good track. I thought it was it's a great story, powerful kind of thing, and they kind of are making. I know that this is the trap that you fall into sometimes. Just because Carl says a lot of silly things doesn't mean everything's silly, and you know it's a good song. It's a
great song. And they don't, that like songs like that aren't hits anymore. There's no chorus. It's a start to finish story.
Yeah, it's like a ballad.
Set to a nice tune. And Carl's landmark, another landmark moment, Carl's ridiculous belief that gay people go out late. And he backs it up with his anecdotal evidence, mainly around some of the people that work at XFM. Break three, Carl roasts the BAFTAs. So Ricky and Steve, their first major award, they won, I think it was Best Comedy, and Ricky won for Lead Performance, and they got a bunch of celebrities to sign the BAFTA swag bag. Carl says it's an all right prize, but he wouldn't want it. That's just a radio sin. You never talk down the prize.
Is this the BAFTA's bag that they went around and got signed?
Yeah, the agent ran around and said it was for charity and got everyone to sign it. The names that they throw up there as well, I noticed Simon Pegg's in there and a bunch of other names that I frankly didn't recognise, but I'm sure they're great.
The fact, it's interesting because they're so, you know, later on they make fun of a radio segment, like a very conventional radio segment that Chris Moyles has been doing. And, you know, they are kind of like, you know, we're anti-radio in a way. We're outside the industry. But then it was interesting to me that at a big awards night, they were thinking of the show and what they could do to give to listeners. So I was like, oh, well, you are thinking of the show outside of the show times. And, you know, the idea of the talent finding their own prizes is like unheard of.
That's true. And it would even be talked, you would be discouraged from doing that because you got to have terms and conditions. I remember
these
when
days,
Disney Plus launched, I was doing a show in Perth and I thought it would be fun because it was $9. It was like $8.99 to have a month subscription. And I was like, I'm going to do a competition and I'll say, oh, you'll win a month of Disney Plus on me. And my plan was to put a $10 note in an envelope and just mail it to them. And it caused all sorts of trouble. Like, you know, really? In relation to how low the stakes are, the amount of like conversations, like, oh, it's okay, we'll take care of it, blah, blah. And it's like, don't worry about it. So yeah, but not a bad prize that they've managed to whip up. Not that Carl's impressed, and not that he had a good time at all. He said he sat there the whole time knowing he wasn't going to win anything. You wouldn't be able to relate to this at all, Zach. You hate awards, anything. You would never go to the radio awards. Would you go to the BAFTAs?
I don't intend to go to the radio awards. I'm not saying I never will. I think there could be a time in my life where I get over my...
cynicism. Hatred.
Cynicism might be the right term. I'm not sure. But there might be a time where I allow myself to partake in these types of endeavors. But generally, the whole deal, dressing up, what he describes, I'm kind of with Carl. The irony of at an entertainment industry event, of it being the most boring thing in the world, like, why couldn't it be fun? Why can't it be entertaining? Instead, you do have to sit through like hours of just the same thing.
I think that's the intention, that it's fun.
The only thing they ever do to make it fun is they have an MC, but they still have to go through. So like in a 3-hour event, the MC might talk for 20 minutes. And then like they still have 2 hours and 40 minutes of giving out awards.
The people that ruin award shows are the presenters of the awards and the winners. The other stuff, the in memoriam section, great fun. Looking at all the people who died, I remember them. But yeah, I like a bit of glitz and glam. I like putting on a suit. I never have an excuse to put on a suit. And I feel like we've talked about it before. I still get a kick out of like open bars and people bringing me dinner.
And is there much interaction? You know, people go like, oh, well, there's all the industry folk there. I always think though, like, is that the place to socialize? Do people want like people coming up and being like, you know, maybe we could work together in the future? like I feel like that would be really annoying.
Going around handing out USB drives with your latest air check.
Yeah.
To all the big wigs in the room. Yeah, and Carl says it was one of the worst things he's had to do. And he's had to work at Cordon Bleu in the past. He was a printer for a while. He's done some pretty shit things. And he says that was one of the worst things he's had to do. Steve asks Carl what he would have done if he weren't there at the BAFTAs. He paints the picture of a pretty nice, quiet Sunday night in. Instead, he went and spent £600 on a suit.
I was impressed with the amount he spent. I thought he might have cheaped out a little bit.
That is a lot. Yeah, nick down to Primark. Do Primark have suits? H&M certainly do.
But that sounds like a legit... But then it was revealed that Ricky also only has one suit, and it's a heavy wool suit that he sweats all night in. So it's kind of like they're all in the same boat there.
But at least with Ricky, it's one that he's had tailor-made. That's why it's his only suit. But then Carl says something I think is quite wise, that like even if it's something that you suspect you might not enjoy, it's worth it for the life experience.
I loved that. I actually thought that was a nice kind of attitude to have. He said, I'll always be wondering. And I think that sometimes too, you know, when you have a bad experience, you're like, well, you know, if I hadn't gone, I probably would have been thinking all this time, you know, what have I missed out on? At least I know now that I didn't miss out on anything.
There you go. And even things that you're nervous or worried about. My friend Nick said a great thing that... So I worked with comedian here in Australia, Nick Cody, on the breakfast show in Brisbane. He did Conan O'Brien's show when he was in America once, right?
Yeah, huge.
And I was like, how... Like, that must be terrifying. Like, it must... He's like, oh, man, I was, like, on the verge of throwing up beforehand. But I told myself... Whether it goes well or poorly, in an hour from now, I'm going to be back in this car heading to my hotel where I can order room service and watch a movie.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Is like, if you're going into an experience where you're not sure how it's going to go, just think in an hour, in a couple of hours, you'll be back home. You'll be comfortable again.
And it's an opportunity, isn't it? You know, that's a great opportunity to be in front of a great audience. You know, those studio audiences are usually pretty good. you're on a massive show, I wouldn't focus on that part too much. But like, you know, it's have fun. Like how much is you don't want to go through your life, and this is a message to myself. So everyone else tune out while I say this to myself. You don't want to go through life just rushing through all these things because you're worried about them, you know? Enjoy it while it's happening. You can come back now. Yeah, you're back.
Okay, all right. Look, I'd like to add one as well. This is something that I realized.
Wait, hang on, is this just for you?
No, I'm going to say this is... No, this is just for me. Can you just...
Okay, I'll tune out for a second. I'll just hum.
Tune out. Everything worthwhile in my life started with risking discomfort. All right, I'm done.
Sorry, you're done? I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm done. All done.
Okay, cool.
Thumbs up. Yeah, nothing worthwhile happens if you're just comfortable your whole life, avoiding discomfort and risk.
That's right.
Anyway, that's the life advice section.
That's the philosophy part of the podcast over. Yeah.
Back into this nonsense. And Carl ends with a great joke that Suzanne, not a great joke, maybe just a hint that Suzanne is maybe a little bit like Carl. She told Carl that he's at the age where he's going to start shrinking. He's 29.
Yeah, that got me. That got me concerned. I'm 32. Oh no, I'm 31. And I was like, oh no, have I shrunk? Am I at the time where I'm starting to shrink? I should measure myself.
I know. Maybe every year we should probably measure ourselves and just see what happens. I mean, I'm at 34, so I've probably already declined. If it's a centimeter a year, I'm in trouble. And some good anchoring from Carl there. He was, I don't know if you noticed, but just quietly, the song was going the entire time in the background.
Absolutely terrified when he started a story over the intro of the song.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, what are you doing, Carl?
And it wasn't a short, like, it wasn't, you know, a five-second anecdote. It went for a little while. I think either it was just an extremely long intro, or Carl is so secretly good that he had the button where you can loop the intro.
No way.
And then he...
No way. No, he hasn't done that. You know what I think it is? I think that it was a song that didn't have lyrics. So they could have just gone as long as they wanted.
Oh, okay. We could probably find that out. But that's a feature that is on like the programs that we use at work, where you can loop the song intro and then like touch it and then it releases it and the song continues.
I've
never had the courage to even attempt it.
When we talk about people and a skill that's not done anymore, is people will loop intros live while they're talking over the top of them. And so they're listening to the music and like beat matching so that they're hitting the right beat so it starts again and sounds seamless while talking, and then they seamlessly hit when the words start all live. That's like the peak of announcing.
It's a lost
art. I wonder if we could do a, you know how Anchorman's premise was the lost art of anchoring the news. I wonder if there could be one about radio announcers.
DJ Man.
Yeah.
But you just still call it Anchorman.
Ayo.
Anchor person. No, let's be honest. I think 99% of radio anchors in Australia are male.
I think I can recall one or two. That wouldn't be true of.
Break four. They keep talking about the BAFTAs. Ricky's challenge at the BAFTAs was to get Dr. Fox over, and they just didn't really know why. I find that charming and funny.
That's what I mean. They're like teenagers. They're just like teenagers, yeah. You know, daring each other to do stuff. Hey, you know, when you used to be out with your friends in public and you'd see someone and you'd say, oh, I know that guy. And your friend would go trick you into telling you what their name was. It's like, oh, his name's Adrian. And then your friend would go, hey, Adrian.
Yeah.
Zach's over here.
Yeah.
He'd be like, don't.
Or it would happen with like, you know, you don't see that many. I grew up in Perth. You don't see that many celebs walking around, but you might see the occasional Big Brother former contestant when that show was really big. And it is that thing of just like, oh, just let's see if we can get them to react. You just shout their name and then like pretend you didn't say it and just watch them look around and be confused.
Great fun.
Who fun was for the that whole family.
From Perth? Was that Hot Dogs?
I think Hot Dogs was from Perth. Was he?
Yeah. No, he's at least in Perth now as a real estate agent because I looked him up recently.
That guy with No, there's that other guy who's also in real estate now. Is that what they either go into radio or real estate, it seems?
Well, because they're both industries where you can use a profile. Can you imagine how much a little bit of profile would help you in the local real estate market? If you say you're hot dogs from Big Brother, people will be like, yeah, show me around hot dogs.
Sell my house. Sold. I'll buy whatever you've got. The former captain of the Perth Wildcats basketball team, he's retired and gone into real estate. He played at the Olympics and stuff.
A few former NRL players, rugby league players from where I'm from, real estate agents now, which is great because it's a place, it's a city that loves rugby league. So, yeah, you're going to go to meet them.
Makes sense.
And then if you don't want to turn down rugby league, great. You want to make them happy. So when they say, yeah, this house is up for $800,000, you'll say, sure thing.
Is it? Okay, sure. I'll take it. All right, Zach, let's write the show. Retired athlete turned real estate agent.
Love it.
It's a comedy pilot coming soon from the Carly Pilk boys. Steve thinks he could get together with Dido, and Carl agrees they should go out. Oh, that's right. No, I've skipped ahead a bit. Someone told Steve that he's better looking on TV. Just an out-and-out insult. And then Ricky tells Carl, we think you're brilliant. We look at you. We like looking at you, talking to you, hearing what you've got to say. We think of you in the week sometimes. A nice, sincere moment there. Steve reckons he and Dido could get together, but he's out of luck there. She is married and has a kid. I have looked it up. Break five. We hear that Ricky and Steve were dancing during the song. I can't imagine you and Dom ever did that. Just had a dance in the studio.
No. I mean, you know, maybe sometimes I liked to, as I've said before, the line between irony and genuine expression of self is pretty blurred. So sometimes I'd have a bit of a dance for fun, in a funny way. You did a bit of a funny dance. But, you know, was I actually dancing? I don't know. I don't know where my motives come from.
I was dancing, but was I actually dancing?
Was I enjoying the moment, or was I making a reference?
Yeah, were you,
to people
were you
who dance
mocking
in
it
studios?
By pretending it to pretending to enjoy it? I thought the philosophical part of the show was over.
What I would do sometimes, this is what we'd do for, because we had those, for a laugh, I would get them to, I loved the way, you know, Stephen Colbert, David Letterman, you know how David Letterman would run across screen, his silhouette. I would do for a bit of a laugh, I'd say, can you guys introduce me when we go in studio, just amongst ourselves. Like that we're running out, you know, like for a football game or we're coming
out.
Yeah,
a basketball team coming out. Yeah.
Or we're coming out, you know, Colbert running onto stage. Because that's kind of funny when you think about it. Hey, they're running and high-fiving everyone to then go stand in one spot and tell jokes. Like, and so I pretend, you know, to be high-fiving the imaginary audience. We did that for a bit of, you know, we've got to boost the morale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jack and I, when the show's starting, when the opener's starting, we will, like, semi-ironically again, I don't know if we're doing it sincerely, but just, like, fist pump in the air, be like, yeah, doing a show, here we go, intro, and then bang, into it. It does, I think there is irony to it, but it sincerely helps. It does bring help. You know, there is that extra 2% of vibe in my voice that otherwise wouldn't be there. So next up, Ricky and Steve were dancing during the song, and they talk about that Ricky and Steve tried to get Ricky on a show called Karaoke Challenge for the Comedy Lab. Now, that made my ears perk up because I thought, what is the Comedy Lab? I looked it up. The Comedy Lab, and I apologize, listeners in the UK, if you're fully aware of this. Unfortunately, I was not. Comedy Lab is a British TV series which showcases pilots of experimental comedy shows. Series have been aired irregularly on Channel 4 and E4 since 1998. Here's where my ears picked up even further. In 2008, Carl Pilkington, Satisfied Fool, was one of the pilots made.
Wow. Is this and anywhere online? What's the premise?
The full episode is on YouTube. I didn't have time to watch it because I was prepping for this.
Is this a one-on-one interview with Ricky?
No, I had a quick look. It looks a bit.
I saw a clip.
No, that's Ricky Gervais' Guide to English or something, or Learning English with
Ricky
Gervais.
Yeah, that's it.
This one, it looks more like The Moaning of Life or Idiot Abroad. I just saw some stills and he's out and about. He's in the world. So it's some Carl content that I have not seen. And there's not much out there. I've seen all these little shorts, the thing that Mary didn't like, all of the things that are on the DVD extras of Animals and the show Extras, where Carl goes and is an extra for a day on the show Extras and makes a little behind-the-scenes documentary. I thought I'd seen everything. So knowing that Carl Pilkington's Satisfied Fool is 28 minutes of content, no, 24 minutes of content waiting for me, I'm very pumped.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, especially early Carl as well.
Well, like, we had that email last week that didn't he say it was around this time and he was still a cult figure? So this is the world sort of embracing Carl Pilkington. They then talk about trying to prank call, who was it again, the BBC One breakfast show?
Chris Moyles.
Chris Moyles, that's it. Who now is the breakfast show on Radio X, the new iteration of XFM. They tried to prank call his show, and did you hear Ricky slip into his Derek voice?
No.
That voice he does, they're like, Moyles-y, what about Spander Bally, golfy? That's the voice he does for Derek.
It's funny how they weren't, they weren't allowed on air. I think if Ricky Gervais called off a radio station today, I'm pretty sure anyone would put him on. Actually, I'm very confident any station in the world would put him on.
even if it was to just want to request Katy Perry, please.
Yeah, that'd be funny. Sure. I liked his, I liked the joke too. It's very like Bodie McBoat taste, but it's 15 years before that, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you ever prank call radio stations?
No, I don't think so. We always talked about it. That was always a segment we were going to do, try to get on other shows, because we used to drive home listening to the AM stations and they'd do a quiz every night. And it goes for like 3 hours, this quiz. It's on one of the AM stations and it's so dry. We always spoke about doing that, but we never got around to it. And we were going to, there was going to be challenges about what we could slip into conversation. I think at one stage we were going to try to do, because we played like hip hop or R&B.
R&B, yeah.
And we wanted to like see if we could like basically just read the lyrics as if they were a story, like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like say that we had a really sad story and just see, because these guys were much older, and just like see if anyone would pick up that it wasn't a real story. But we never got around to doing it. It was, too hard basket.
If I could make a suggestion to everyone, I think it's on YouTube. If you type in Radio Prank India,
that's one of the greatest pieces of radio I've ever heard. And it was made by people who aren't radio announcers, I imagine. I don't know who it's made by. Do you?
Well, I actually, well, maybe talk about it off air, but someone I know, very well known radio announcer, who claims to have been a part of it, claims to be one of those voices.
They got a room full of people to call up and just to the response to this quiz, just no matter what the answer question was, they'd say India. But this announcer doesn't go along with the joke and gets more and more angry. And it goes over like a really, really long period of time.
It's one of those late night, late afternoon quizzes that goes forever. And he's just trying line after line. And they do a very good job at sounding like they're sincerely going to answer the question.
So the announcer
there's a megaphone involved at one point. It's,
you're not one of these immature little brats. Hanging out in the room. Are about to prank me, and the person will be like, no, I can't stand these people. They're ruining the radio show for everyone. And this will go on for a minute. And then he goes, okay, what's your answer? And there we go, India.
it's great gear. I've never, I'm not very, I don't really enjoy pranks full stop. They make me cringe. I get very embarrassed. So I've never been able to,
in that instance, though, it's kind of like, it's like, where's the power in the prank? Like, the radio announcer always has the power, don't they? Because they control what goes to where. They have the biggest microphone. And so in that instance, it's a bit of a reversal of a prank, isn't it? Because usually it's the more powerful one pranking someone with less power. But this is kind of like punching up kind of thing.
But in a way, It's not. It's not on unsuspecting strength. Like Eric Andre, I think, is a genius comedian, but I can't watch his stuff because he's out in the real world pranking unsuspecting civilians. This, where it's a very, it's very lighthearted pranking a radio host. Like it's, yeah, it's not. It's punching up, I guess, and it's very benign, so it's just fun. No one's getting hurt.
I got very close to being pranked once by a listener when it was April Fool's Day, but it was like a quarter to 10 at night, and it had slipped my mind. I was about to end at 10, so like I wasn't really thinking about it. And this guy called up, and he wanted to give a shout out to someone, and I recorded the call during the song. And I didn't realize that the person's name was like something funny, you know, like they do in The Simpsons with Moe's Tavern. And so I didn't realize until I was playing the call on air. But I used to, thankfully, I used to live intro the calls and live outro the calls. And so I had in my mind how I was going to outro it, you know, like, yeah, whatever his name is, dug a hole. Big shout out to you tonight, mate. Hope you're having a good one.
Mike Hunt. Thanks for the call, Mike Hunt.
But I heard it as it was playing out, and off the back of it, I was able to say, like, I went like, oh, you thought you could get me? And I totally went like, you're going to have to get up pretty early to slip one past me.
Didn't come down the last rainfall. I knew that was a prank the whole time.
We were 2 seconds away from me being totally humiliated by actually airing that call sincerely.
It used to be a thing around one of the radio stations that I worked at where for a time they would call one of the Christian radio stations, which there's a surprising number, I think, of like called Hope FM and that sort of thing, The Light, where they'd call one of their like their drive show. And it would be that thing of try to involve this word. So everyone's sitting around on a Friday afternoon having drinks, their drive show is on, and they're trying to get on for the talk topics, and like you have to say the word banana. It's a great time. And here's another insight. A lot of people who work in radio, they have a folder on a hard drive or on their laptop somewhere that is just full of people making mistakes. It's full of prank calls. It's full of people saying things ridiculous. It's full of like radio delights where you can just have hours of fun going through those.
It is fun. Once you work in radio, you realize how easy it is to get on the radio as a caller. And a lot of announcers do use that to their advantage to have some fun sometimes.
Yeah. Another one of the all-time greats, also on YouTube, and we'll get back to the air check after this, is the newsreader very early in the morning who is vomiting, but she's trying to maintain her composure during the news bulletin. And it's a very somber, like it's a talk radio station, so she's going, bushfires are ravaging news. And she just...
I've never heard that.
Oh, it's great fun. I'll send it to you after this. Anyway, I've lost my place. Where are we? So, break six, what's Carl going to do when Ricky and Steve aren't going to be there? They're going to be off making series two of The Office. He's going back to his day job as an imaging producer for the station, and he sort of explains what that is. Carl is an early adopter of finding things out on the internet.
This is so funny, the way that he talks about... what we would now call like a internet hole, or what do you call it when Wikipedia links you to another article, It's a very established thing now, like a rabbit hole or a spiral, a YouTube spiral. Yeah, yeah. But he's talking about it as if, you know, the internet has just been invented. He's like, you go on to read about one thing, you can read about other things as well.
But it almost like it has for Ricky and Steve, they haven't accepted it as sort of the new source of for all information.
Well, it's interesting because you know, he says it's all unverified, and I remember when I was in primary school, Wikipedia especially was a lot like that. But these days, because the references, you can go see where the references are so clearly, Wikipedia is like pretty good.
If anyone's in university, I would be curious to know, because it was like, no, you can't quote Wikipedia. It's
when I was at university,
we won't accept that.
You couldn't quote Wikipedia, but what they said you could go there and get information and find the source, you know, because it will link to the source.
Well, that's fair enough, I guess. Can you quote the comment section below someone's
Well, because I did like a creative industries thing. There was a lot of quoting of like, so I would write things on like Captain Planet and stuff like that. Like I would try to purposely, why I made things so difficult for myself, I don't know. But like I would try to write essays on like, yeah, the imagery in Captain Planet. I would try to do like high-minded ideas on really like cartoony shows for fun. And it was really, really hard to find sources because I'm like, people weren't writing on, you know, Transformers in the 80s or Captain Planet or whatever it was. And so I was always marked down on my references. They're like, you can't quote that.
What was your degree?
Creative industries, interdisciplinary. It's like an arts degree, basically. Writing, yeah. it was creative.
General,
writing.
Just a general sort of territory.
Yeah, screenwriting. Oh, you picked it. Like you picked what your kind of majors were. So like screenwriting and creative writing were the main things I focused on.
I feel like I did a similar sort of thing. I don't know what I did at university. I went there for 3 years. I don't know what I did. So Carl slips into the story of the woman who boiled her brain, and he believes it sincerely.
There's a great kind of back and forth here between Ricky and Carl, very comedic, where they're both really just repeating the phrase, she boiled her brain, with different intonations. and Carl, again, it's just this naivety, isn't it? Or
yeah.
Like he doesn't question, he just takes things at face value. And then at the end of the episode, he, you know, Ricky freaks out, which we might get to, that they've been making fun of this song, but it actually, you know, the Rod Stewart song.
They've been having fun with it, yeah.
But it might actually be a true story, and he feels really bad about it because he wouldn't want to make fun of it if it was a true story. And Carl's confused about why that could be a true story, but the things he finds on the internet can't be. And he's genuinely perplexed by it.
He's a mystery. But I also feel like he, with the story, so the guy who's falling, who jumps off the building because he didn't get the call about his business, and as he passed his office, he could hear the phone ringing. I love Carl's reactions. Oh God, like just every single one. Because they all land. Story, they all land for him.
Yeah, every story that Ricky and Steve share to illustrate that they're not true stories. Yeah, they all hit Carl in the same way where he's amazed by it.
Yeah, but I also just think that he is just impressed by the stories. It's just an interesting anecdote, let alone that he genuinely believes them. Break seven, it's competition time. I think the first competition ever on this show to date. Have I got that wrong? Can you think of another time where they gave something away?
Yeah, they give away tickets at the start all the time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they gave away Incubus tickets or something. Well... okay, we'll disregard that comment then. It's competition time. They want you. It's their big final competition. They've got this great prize from the BAFTAs, and they want you to pitch what you want to give Carl to improve his life.
Yeah, I didn't really understand this. Was the idea that it's kind of
sounds
like
complicated and a lot of work.
The way that they've been giving him things to read, this might actually be a physical item rather than like an experience.
They liken it to Swap Shop, where you go, I would like to trade for the BAFTA bag this book on insects, which I think will improve Carl's life because he is curious about the natural world.
And so there's a lot of heavy lifting in explaining it. There's kind of 3 or 4 minute periods where they're explaining the address.
They work out the competition mechanic during the break. That's a bit of a no-no as well. But they follow that up next week, so we'll find out the result of that. Then break eight, they joke about Anastasia the singer, which is just that really puts me fairly and squarely back in 2002. I can see those tinted glasses. I'm excited that the first Spider-Man movie is coming out, really of that era. Did you know, Zach, that just literally a couple of weeks ago, as of recording of this episode, Anastasia was the winner of The Masked Singer here in Australia?
In Australia.
She was the final one. She was the final masked singer. You'd be interested to know.
That has not come across my feed at all.
I looked her up and that was the first thing. I couldn't believe it. She has ditched the tinted glasses. in 2021. That's no longer a part of that.
What was her costume? What was her mask? I mean, you know, some may say the glasses were a mask for a while.
Oh, okay. We're back in the philosophical zone. What was she masking? Her hangover. No, she was the one with the long neck and then like a...
Oh, so it's just like it's a monster. It wasn't like a parrot or an alien.
Nah, what did they call her? I'll look it up.
That's a pretty big name for Australia. We get our masked singer.
We also had Vinnie Jones as well.
That's kind of the running joke. So the masked singer, I'm sure it's in the UK, it's in America. And, you know, the hosts are kind of like, they have to bandy about who they think that they might be. And so they're saying, like, could it be Justin Bieber?
Those judges, because they are so interested in like, oh my, is it Tom Cruise? I think it's probably Tom Cruise. I think Dave Hughes.
We get like very
has never worked so hard for money he doesn't need.
The people it's revealed to be Australia. Like we have a lot of celebrity shows, but we're not really a big enough country to have our own celebrities. Compared to the UK and America. And so a lot of the time it is like, who's that? Okay.
But also the host, Osher Gunsberg, when they take their mask off, he has to shout their resume really quickly, when it's someone they don't know. So once it was Michael Bevan, who was a cricketer. And he went, oh, my God, it's former international test cricketer Michael Bevan! And everyone has to go, whoa! And that the first season in Australia, Lindsay Lohan was one of the judges. So she had no idea who any of them were. But, despite the COVID border shutdown, they've managed to step up their game this year with at least, like, Vinnie Jones. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And Anastasia. anyway, Mars Singer. Carl's feelings are a little hurt. That's what I've got next. He says he feels like he can't say anything right. Steve encourages Carl to be, again, this is a nice, like, sincere moment. He encourages Carl to be more analytical, to not just take things at face value, to question and to query.
But do you see some irony in this after Steve had kind of made one of his most broadest, most offensive remarks ever couple of minutes earlier, where he said that he didn't think there were any great women
can't write
songwriters? And then a minute later, he's talking to Carl about ignorance. I'm like, okay.
I know. Well, that's why it is. If you start doing the what's offensive things, is like, well, Steve is meant to be the educated one. So when he says something like that, I feel like it carries more weight than one of Carl's, you know, his stupid things that he says.
It's interesting too when you talk about, you know, what's offensive and stuff like that, because I thought this was another example of Ricky, you know, later on, I'll just jump ahead a bit, when he starts to get worried about the song, that they're making fun of a song that's a true story and a tragic story. He seems genuinely, you know, very genuinely upset that he might have upset someone. And, that's just not something that I connect with Ricky these days. This is by far the most Ricky content I've ever listened to. So I'm not super across how I see the Golden Globe stuff and, you know, I see the headlines of Gervais offensive again. And I see the quotes with his face against them of how you should be allowed to say anything. Or to be honest, I don't know if he's ever actually said that or people have misappropriated it to him. Yeah. But, yeah, he does seem like there's a – you can hear in his voice that it's genuine in those moments where he's like, oh, no, I might have actually upset someone properly here.
Yeah, well, I think it's just all about the target is that, like, so he's made a brand for himself hosting those Golden Globes, and it's like, well, you're the most privileged, wealthy group of people in the world, so you're fair game. I'm going to be, like, tell kind of nasty jokes because the millions of people watching on the couches with mortgages and real problems will enjoy it. But I think, he definitely is not out to be overtly nasty for the sake of a joke, just broadly speaking, I don't think. A nice insight into Ricky and Steve's relationship away from the radio station that we come back to Steve being completely fed up with Ricky's eating habits. It's the second time he's talked about it on the show. And well, that he's,
did you notice here also that he talks about how he won't eat a vegetable? And then, like, so he wouldn't eat the vegetable pie at the BAFTAs. Sorry, I said BAFTAs a few times. don't roast me on that. I understand. I pronounced it wrong. It's not a word that I've had to pronounce a lot in my lifetime. Like, I'm sure people from the UK are used to it being said.
Being in primary school in sex ed, like the first ever sex ed class, I put my hand up and went, "Excuse me, why do people masturbate?" So, hey, none of us are perfect.
I've had my fair share of mispronunciations in my time. But the now these days he's a vegetarian, isn't he? So he only eats vegetables.
I think so, yeah, or even vegan. He's even plant-based.
So
but
he's done
rich,
the
you know,
180.
Now an educated, and a lot of things have changed since 2002.
Where he used to put cheese on everything.
Cheese on everything, yep. And Steve points out his hypocrisy of just being so worried about his health but constantly eating bad food and having gone to the doctor's waiting room. I wonder what scene in the office it was that they wrote while in the doctor's waiting room.
I wonder also the people around him. You know, I don't know if he was in a private hospital where they had a kind of a private waiting room. When I've been in the emergency waiting room, you've got a kind of a mixed bag of people holding bleeding thumbs and holding arms that are in slings and things. It's not exactly the place where you want to be writing comedy.
Break 9, White Van Carl. This one doesn't really go anywhere for me, this edition. You know, Steve lobs up the different things and Carl doesn't really have anything to say about them. And just bear in mind, this was the same segment, 3 episodes ago that brought us the horse and the house story. So it just kind of goes to show that you got to just keep throwing things out there and see what comes back.
And sometimes Carl knows so little about the situation. Like, sometimes it's funny how little he knows, but if you know... you've got to know a little bit to comment. Like, a lot of these stories he's hearing for the first time. It's like, how could he possibly have an opinion on it?
Yeah. And even Ricky's sort of spidey senses go off when they ask about the French fascist leader. I think there's been enough of a track record now that I think he wisely says, like, I'm not sure we should be asking Carl. Because Carl, in his way, he might go, well, you know, there are a lot of immigrants. Or just something where it's like, no! So, but it doesn't go down that path. Break 10 is when they listen to the killing of Georgie right at the end of the show through the filter of Carl. And as you've pointed out, that Ricky worries that it might be a true story. So I've looked that up. I can finally put this to bed after 20 years.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
So this is what Rod Stewart says. While the outlines of Georgie's story and his murder are true, Stewart admits, I wasn't on the scene when it happened, so I embellished a bit. He painted a relatively sympathetic portrait of the killers, making it clear they didn't intend to kill Georgie. That was poetic license, Stewart said. I thought maybe they didn't mean to take his life, they just meant to do him over. Stewart says his record company had no problem with the song, releasing it in 1976 as the second single from his album A Night on the Town, and at first the BBC wouldn't play it due to its subject matter.
And so Georgie was a real person and a real friend of Rod?
Yeah, it seems so, broadly speaking. Okay. Yeah.
Well, isn't that a pre-Google period? Because not only did they not know that, but the audience obviously couldn't look it up. No. So it just kind of swings by, I guess. Whereas, yeah, like these days we found out really quickly and you could go, yeah, probably don't make jokes about that.
I mean, did you hear how... quickly, I got Gimme Shelter up and playing on this podcast. That's what we're dealing with these days. So that is the end of Series 1, Episode 22. I do have a key phrase to add to the list. It's when Ricky says, Carl, we think you're brilliant. We like looking at you, talking to you, hearing what you've got to say when we think about you in the week sometimes. Zach, did you have a favourite bit?
Carl going through... just how amazed he is at what the internet can do. Just the wonder in his voice when he's like, yeah, so you can start with one article and that's not all it has. There's so much more.
I've got his sort of breakdown of the BAFTAs that leads to him saying it was the worst thing he's ever had to do because they might have suspected he wasn't enjoying it. They might have suspected that he was glad it was going to be over, but there's no way Ricky and Steve expected him to say it was the worst thing he'd ever done. So the podium, this is something new that we've started, and I've got an idea I want to pitch to you, Zach. Instead of just going through it every week, because you're right, for a lot of the time it won't affect the top three, we've only got one episode left after this one for series one. Why not after episode 23, you and I do a special bonus wrap-up episode where you and I both bring our top 10.
Episodes?
Yeah, so you can go through...
Top 10 of 20? That's a lot.
Top 10 of 23. Well, okay, how about top 5?
Yeah, top 5.
Okay. We've negotiated. We've come to an agreement. Top 5. So you can just go through, like, because on the Spotify or wherever you listen to this, I do make sort of key point notes on what happens in the episode. So you can use those and see what they spark up. So we'll do that. We'll wrap up the whole series one in a special episode, which will be like episode 24 of this show. Contact us, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com, Zach Mander, ZACHMANDER, on Instagram and TikTok. And you can check me out, David Ferrier Cartoons, on Instagram. Any final words, Zach?
See you later.
Nice. See you next week.
Bye.